You can turn to Romans chapter 8 if you want to. I've read something here. I don't know how many of you have this book. It's a great book, great studies. The very last study in this book is called What Can I Do For You Today? It's Open My Eyes That I May See. And the last study is about 4 pages. So, of course, it's a real long, extensive study. 4 whole pages, maybe 4 pages in a paragraph. And the last, one of the last sentences in this last study really got my attention the last time I was reading it. I read this sentence, and it was just, I'll read this sentence. It's about, you know, what can I do for you today? That's the title of it, and that's what it's about. And he talks about all these different motivations that people could have for doing things. And then he says, at the last here, duty, you know, duty like this is what I should do, responsibility, you know, like what should I do, what do I have to do, those sorts of things. Duty, responsibility, and endurance are all lesser motivations or attributes or whatever. And if we can achieve the greater, the attitude of what can I do for you today, then the lesser will automatically be included. I read that, I was like, and in Romans 8, who would like to read, you're there I guess, I'm not, who would like to read verse 15? Somebody? Connie, I saw your hand.
15?
Yeah, chapter 8, verse 15.
For ye have not received the spirit of the bondage again to fear, but you have received the spirit of adoption, whereby we cry, Abba, Father.
Right. And that spirit of adoption, we know, it's spirit of sonship. And the word Abba, it's sort of like what we would say today, daddy. You know, it's a real tender, surreal. Grandpa has to get his reading glasses on.
I see him like this.
I think they're hers, but I'm using them.
Yeah?
No, they're not mine. He thinks they're mine. I carry them for him.
Well, they're red.
I can say. He told the kids that's my dinner. Mom, I'm using mom's.
All right, we're gonna turn to 1 Corinthians 7 instead and get into the marriage relationship. But Abba, it's a real tender term. It's a term of affection. It's like a little child. Generally, you know, most of us, if our fathers were alive or are alive, you know, maybe at our age to say daddy would be a little bit unusual. We could, but, you know, generally a small child says daddy. And I was looking, I wanted to get this thing, you've seen it probably, this photograph during the Cuban Missile Crisis, or there's President Kennedy and about, I don't know, maybe 8 other guys standing around in the Oval Office. Bless you. And there's little John Jr. playing under the desk.
Yes.
I tried to get that and print it out this morning, but there's all kinds of copyright and royalty stuff, aside nuts to it. But it really communicates, you know, like, here's this little kid. He was 4 years old or whatever he was. Here's these guys standing in the room. They know that they're not going to tolerate those missiles staying in Cuba because of such and such. They're going to get those missiles out, one way or the other way. Those missiles are not going to stay. But they didn't really want World War III to start. So they were sort of stuck like, you know, what do we do? I mean, it was a very, you know, and a lot of us were alive back then. It was a time where, and you know, it could have gone into World War III. It could have gone either way. And these guys are trying to figure out, what can we do? The missiles are definitely going to go. If we got to go through World War III to get them out, we're going to go through World War III. But we don't want that. What? And here's this little kid playing under the desk while they're trying to make this, figure out what's going to resolve, you know, Holocaust or whatever. And I thought, you know, that to me, that's daddy. How come that little kid, this is like ultra secret conversations, not even top secret. This is ultra. This never leaves this room because of what's at stake. How come that kid gets to be here? Because that's his daddy. That's why. And it's like us with God. The kid didn't do anything to earn being in the room. We didn't do anything to earn being kids of God, right? Jesus Christ paid for it. We believe. We got to be. We get to call him daddy. And it's a real tender, real intimate relationship, not based on anything we did. We did have something to do with it, you know, because we didn't have to confess Jesus as Lord, believe God raised him from the dead. But that's very, very little. It's almost nothing. And yet we get that tender relationship with God. And if you remember, you know, that sentence, if you have the greater, the lesser is automatically included. What we have today, because not of us, but because of Jesus Christ, is a lot greater than what they had before. Not that God didn't want to give it to them, just the legal price had to be paid before God could legally do it. We got that Abba, Daddy relationship because he paid for it. But with what we have, the lesser is included. What was available previously, it's not as if, oh, you can't have any of that, but you get this. No. Whatever was available previously that was good, that God was able to make available, that still is on the table. It's just that a lot more is also on the table. And some of this stuff, like you read Riches of God's Grace, the New Covenant, you know, it separates a lot of it out. But anything that God was able to make available previously, he didn't take that off the table once Jesus Christ had fully accomplished what was needed. That was just added to. And with that in mind, if you turn to James chapter 2, there's a facet of this that for many years, it was one of those head scratchers for me. Of course, when all my hair got gone, that's when I still scratch my head. But James chapter 2, I didn't have anything to do with anything, I guess. James chapter 2. Who'd like to read a verse? Okay, Terry, verse 23, please.
And the scripture was fulfilled which saith, Abraham believed God, and it was imputed unto him for righteousness, and he was called the friend of God.
Yeah. It used to really scratch my head so much of this. You know, I would say to people, and I would always get reproved, I say, you know, we can be friends of God. And it seemed like, I don't think I ever said that one time without being reproved, we're not friends of God, we're sons of God. And I thought, so I can't be God's friend because I'm his son? It just didn't, you know, and it just was one of those things that just, when I read that thing there, if you have the greater, the lesser is automatically included. It's not like, well, now you can't be his friend because now you're his son. You know, truthfully for me, if I had to choose between those two, I'm not sure I wouldn't pick friend. You know, why would I want to be in a situation where I could not have an amicable relationship with someone? Oh, because he's your father. Is that a step forward? You know, Abraham was a friend, but now I can't be because I'm his son. It just never made any sense. Well, the reason it didn't make sense is because it don't make sense. It's not that God took anything away. It's added to. It's included within the Abba, the daddy relationship. We have a lot more, but this is a part of it. It's not like God says, you can't have this. Yeah, you can have that and also all this other stuff that Abraham never could have. And it's a great deal. Look at Genesis chapter, 18, I think? Genesis 18. I know you're familiar with this stuff, but I think it's a great, you know, one thing I like about this fellowship, it's not like, you know, oh, let's get an intellectual knowledge of stuff so we can, you know, increase our, you know, whatever. Oh, now I know more. Well, so what? What good does it do to know information if I can't do anything with it? You know, if that's all it is, I'll watch the football game. I mean, that's just me. You know, if I can't do anything with it, well, what do I want to learn it for? You know, but we can do something with it. And in Genesis, 18 here? How about we start in verse, 16. It said, and this is some angels here that were, you know, talking with Abraham. Verse 16, and the men, those are angels, rose up from there and looked toward Sodom, and Abraham went with them to bring them on the way. I don't remember really if he told them at this point that they were angels or not. You could read it. Anyways, he went with them to bring them on the way. Verse 17, and the Lord said, shall I hide from Abraham that thing that I'm doing, seeing that Abraham shall surely become a great and mighty nation, and all the nations of the earth shall be blessed in him? For I know him, that he'll command his children and his household after him, and they shall keep the way of the Lord to do justice and judgment, that the Lord may bring upon Abraham that which he's spoken of him. And the Lord said, because the cry of Sodom and Gomorrah is great, and because their sin is very grievous, I'm going to go down now and see whether they've done altogether according to the cry of it, which has come unto me. And if not, I'll know. And the men turned their faces from there and went towards Sodom, but Abraham stood yet before the Lord. And Abraham drew near and said, are you going to destroy the righteous with the wicked? Now, Abraham, by this point, he already had believed, like we read in James 2:23, that Abraham believed God and it was imputed unto him for righteousness. That had already happened, I think, before this. Either way, he was the same guy. Maybe I got the chronology a little bit mixed up. But this is a guy whom God said, this is my friend. And he says in verse 23, you're going to destroy the righteous with the wicked? And realizing the relationship that God had with, I mean, that Abraham had with God, he wasn't being smart aleck when he said this to God. He was just, he had a concern on his mind. And he was curious, but he had this concern. You're going to destroy the righteous with the wicked? Verse 24, what if there's 50 righteous inside the city? Are you going to also destroy and not spare the joint for the 50 righteous that are there? Verse 25, that'd be far from you to do according to this manner, to kill the righteous with the wicked, and that the righteous should be just like the wicked. That'd be far from you. Shall not the judge of all the earth do right? You know, and you, when you realize he's not being a smart aleck when he says this to God. He just had a concern. Maybe he wasn't really clear about this whole thing. You gonna do this? What if that? You know, and this is, you know, like we got Abba Father, but Abraham, he doesn't look like he was real nervous, does he? Like he was quaking in his boots. If you don't mind, could I mention something to? He was just straight up. You know, hey, what about this? You know, and we got more. We got Abba Father. But in the greater, what we have, the lesser is included. Abraham, he was just straight up with God. He wasn't being smart aleck, but he had a concern, and he talked with God about it. In verse 26, the Lord said, if I find in Sodom 50 righteous within the city, I'll spare all the joint for their sakes. Abraham answered and said, behold, now I've taken upon me to speak unto the Lord, who am but dust and ashes. What if there's lacks five of the 50 righteous? Are you going to destroy all the sake for lack of five? He said, if I find 45, I won't destroy it. He spake unto him yet again, said, what if there's 40 found there? He said, I ain't going to wipe it out for 40. Verse 30, he said, oh, let not the Lord be angry, and I'm going to speak. Well, he's done a pretty good job of speaking already. You know, he says, don't get pissed off at me about this. You know, and he wasn't saying it to try to piss him off. He was just, he had a concern, and he was talking with him about it. Well, we got greater. This was what a friend did. We got Abba. He did not have that. We got this and a lot more. And if he could be that way with God, you know, he was just very open with God. He was not afraid of it. Do you get the sense that Abraham might have been a little bit comfortable with God? I do. Very not afraid of him. He said, oh, let not the Lord be angry. But he's saying it whether the Lord gets angry or not. He's just saying, you know, don't get pissed off here, but what is it? Verse 30, let not the Lord be angry, and I'll speak. What if there should be found 30? He said, I won't kill for 30. Verse 31, behold, now I've taken upon me to speak unto the Lord. What if there's 20 found there? He said, I won't destroy for 20. Verse 32, oh, let not the Lord be angry. I will speak just this one more time. What if 10 shall be found there? He said, I won't destroy for 10's sake. And the Lord went his way as soon as he had left communing with Abraham, and Abraham went back to his place. But he had it wasn't just Abraham talking to God either. It was God was talking back to him. Abraham asked him, what if there's 50? God says, okay, I won't take it out for 50. And they had this back and forth thing. Abraham was concerned. He talked to God about it. God responded to Abraham's concern, so on and so forth. You know, we know, but he had a very comfortable, he was very comfortable in God's presence. You know, and he did not have Romans 8:15. We do. Look at Deuteronomy chapter 18. Another guy we're all familiar with. And when we get there, whoever's there, if you want to, somebody want to read verse 18?
I will raise them up a prophet from among their brethren, like unto thee, and I will put my words in his mouth, and he shall speak unto them all that I shall command him.
Right. Wonder how Moses felt when God told Moses, because Moses knew God's talking about this coming Redeemer. I'll raise them up a prophet. You know, Moses knew that prophet. He's the one, it goes on. The next verse, it shall come to pass, whoever will not hearken unto my words, which he shall speak in my name, I will require it of him, and so on and so forth. Moses had it dialed in. This prophet that God's going to raise up, that's the Redeemer he was talking about in Genesis 3:15. How do you think Moses felt when God is telling Moses, this prophet that I'm going to raise up, he's going to be like you? That's what he said, a prophet from among their brethren, like unto you. How do you think that made Moses feel? The coming Redeemer, he's going to be like you. I'll put my words in his mouth, and whatever I tell him to speak, he's going to speak those words. I don't think it probably made Moses feel very bad. You know, and Moses, if you look at his life, there's a lot of things God told Moses to do, and he did it. There were some times where Moses had questions about it, you know, especially early on. And he talked to God. He didn't say, oh, I'm fine, when he wasn't. He was very open with God. From the beginning, there were other times when Moses did things, rarely, because Moses has said he was faithful in all of God's house. But he stubbed his toe sometimes. And even those times, he and God had a great relationship. And God said, I'm going to raise up a prophet. He's going to be like you. You know, must have made him feel great. If you look at Exodus 33, we'll look at a little situation that God and Moses had. Exodus 33. I guess we'll start in verse 9. It says, it came to pass, as Moses entered into the tabernacle, the cloudy pillar descended, or came down, and stood at the door of the tabernacle, and the Lord talked with Moses. And all the people saw the cloudy pillar stand at the tabernacle door, and all the people rose up and worshipped every man in his tent door. The people, they couldn't see God, but they could see that cloudy pillar. You know, here comes Moses out of the tabernacle. This cloudy pillar just appears, and the people seeing that cloudy pillar knew something's going on here. You know, they knew that God was there talking with them because they could see the cloudy pillar. Verse 11, and the Lord spoke to Moses face to face as a man speaks to his friend. And he, Moses, turned again into the camp, but his minister Joshua, the son of Nun, a young man, departed not out of the tabernacle. And Moses said to the Lord, look, you're telling me bring up this people, and you've not let me know whom you're going to send with me. Yet you've said, I know you by name, and you've also found grace in my sight. Again, it says, I know, Moses talking to God, he said, you've told me, I know you by name. Well, he didn't have Abba Father, did he, Moses? No, he didn't. We do. You know, I was thinking sometimes I'll see somebody, oh, I know that guy. That's the guy that he did blah, 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 and yak, yak, yak. What's his name? It escapes me, but I know that guy. Well, okay. That's one way to know somebody. You remember something that they did. But it's a little bit more if you know somebody by name. It sort of indicates a little bit closer relationship, doesn't it? I think I know most of you in this room by name. You know, but I don't know, you know, maybe somebody on the television said, or you see a guy catch a football, oh, yeah, that's the guy that, what's his name? He's number 33. I don't know what his name is. You know, but he said, I know you by name. And, you know, you told me this. Verse 13, now therefore I pray you, if I have found grace in your sight, show me now your way, that I may know you, that I might find grace in your sight, and consider that this nation is your people. You know, I mean, that was what Moses requested. If I have found grace in your sight, if I have, show me your way so I can know you. That's what he wanted. And it said in verse 11, God talked to him face to face like a person talks to his friend. You know, and this is the lesser. Moses did not have what we got. He didn't have Abba Father, not his fault. It just Jesus Christ hadn't come yet. But this is the lesser, you know. Verse 14, and he said, God said to Moses, my presence shall go with you, and I will give you rest. And Moses said to the Lord, if your presence does not go with me, I don't even want to leave. Then he'll carry us not up from hence, not up hence. Don't even take us out of here. You know where he was standing when he said that? In a barren wilderness. So barren, God had to give them manna so they wouldn't die of starvation. There was no food. That's why God gave them manna. There were times where God had to bring water out of a rock. That's how much water was there. That's how luxurious this location was where Moses was standing, where Moses said, if you don't go with us, I don't even want to go. That's the kind of heart he had toward God, which might factor in a little bit to why verse 11 said, the Lord talked to Moses face to face like a man talks with his friend. That's how Moses felt toward God. You know, I'm standing in a bleak, barren wilderness. You're promising us a land flowing with milk and honey. But if you don't go with us to that oasis, I'd rather stay here in the desert. I'd rather be in a desert with you than in an oasis without you. That's how he felt toward God. You know, and he's called a friend of God. And we can have that too. And I think that we do. You know, that attitude of, yeah, all of the stuff in life, that's great. You know, all the stuff, that's fine. But you, you're what I really got to have. You know, that's that Abba. Or, yeah, Father, I appreciate all this stuff. It's some of it's great, some of it's horseshit. Pardon me, might want to edit that. You know, but you, God, you what I really got to have. You know, and that's how Moses was. I guess we're going to look there. Yeah. Well, that's the same thing. How about look at 1 Samuel chapter 16. We'll just skip by here on the way to somewhere else. 1 Samuel 16. Just one more. And Samuel also was a guy who was faithful. There's a place, what is it? I think it's chapter 4, verse 1. I think it is. Someplace. Oh, that's a different deal. Anyway, Samuel was faithful with God also. He had a very great reverence for God. From the time he was a little tyke until the day he fell asleep, he had a great reverence for God. And this is just a little, maybe, example. 1 Samuel 16, verse 1. It says, this is after Saul had rejected God and stuff. Verse 1, the Lord said to Samuel, how long are you going to mourn for Saul, seeing I have rejected him from reigning over Israel? Fill your horn with oil and go. I'm going to send you to Jesse the Bethlehemite, for I have provided myself a king among his sons. And Samuel said, how can I go? If Saul hears about it, he's going to kill me. And this was, again, look at the, Samuel wasn't being a smart aleck with God. He had a concern, and he talked with God about that concern because he just did not know. He knew, if I do what you're telling me to do, that guy is going to take my head off of my shoulders. Not that he was not willing to do what God asked him to do. He was just, and from reading the context of Samuel's life, it's very clear Samuel very much did. want to do, whatever it was that God wanted him to do. But Samuel knew in this situation, you're asking me to do something, I'm going to have a tough time doing that with my head off of my shoulders. That's what, you know, how can I go? If Saul hears about it, he's going to kill me. But he wasn't saying it from a I'm afraid to point of view. He was expressing a concern. I'm not going to be able to do what you're asking me to do because of such and such. So how are we going to get around this? And then God responded, take a heifer with you and say, I'm come to sacrifice to the Lord. And call Jesse to the sacrifice, and I will show you what you shall do. And you shall anoint to me him whom I name unto you. And Samuel did that which the Lord spake. And you know, God told him what to do. And he didn't give him the whole picture even here. In verse 3, he said, I will show you what you shall do. But he gave him part of it. Take a heifer with you. Say, I'm coming to do a sacrifice. Invite Jesse. And that's all God gave him at that point. And at that point, I'll show you what to do. And then I'll tell you who, and so on and so forth. So Samuel said, okay, so far I know. Don't say I'm going to anoint one of this guy's sons as king. Say I'm coming here to do sacrifice, which he did. You know, invite Jesse. I'm sure there were others invited. You know, but God walked him through because Samuel had that reverence. Yes, reverence, but a great, you know, like the bottom line of it was he just so loved God. He wanted to do what God wanted to do. He wasn't clear how. He wasn't being a smart aleck. He just needed more information, and so God gave him more information. Samuel did not have what we got. Samuel was not saying, Abba, Father. Just wasn't Samuel's fault. He was just born before Jesus Christ completed what was necessary. We got more, but in the more that we have, the lesser is included. We could have that same thing with God. And I know we do. You know, and it sometimes is more like a growing into where more and more frequently we tap into and we utilize what we have. If you look at Philippians chapter 2, another example or similar, you know, it's like, I remember Dr. Werrell used to teach so many times, you operate the Spirit. The Spirit does not operate you. And it's like that with any of the things of God, including with the relationship that God has given to us of Abba Father. We utilize the relationship. That relationship is not going to use us and make us, you know, approach God in such and such a way. We use what God has given. What God has given does not use us. In Philippians chapter 2, who would like to read first? I think we're going to start in verse 19. Yeah. Somebody want to read a few verses?
Sure.
Is that okay, Peggy? Verses 19 through 22.
Alrighty. But I trust in the Lord Jesus to send Timothy shortly unto you, that I also may be of good comfort when I know your state. For I have no man like-minded who will naturally care for your state. For all seek their own, not the things which are Jesus Christ. But you know the proof of him, that as a son with the Father, he hath served with me in the gospel.
Right. That same way like with like Abraham, he had that working relationship with God. You know, he believed God. He was called a friend of God. Moses, he had that working relationship with God. God says, the coming Redeemer, he's going to be like you. You know, I'll raise up a prophet from blah, blah, blah. He'll be like you. Which, you know, you think about, I do, that prophet whom God did raise up that was like Moses, Jesus Christ, at one point said, not my will, but thine be done. That's the relationship that that prophet, Jesus Christ, had with God. That's the same, and that helps you, because God said in Deuteronomy 18:18, he's going to be like you. That tells you something about Moses. Moses had a relationship with God also. Not what I want, whatever you want. You know, and it shows throughout the things that Moses did. God told Moses to do some things. They had some discussions sometimes. You know, but Moses did whatever you want. You know, and we got Abba. Moses didn't have that. But we can have that same attitude toward God too. Whatever you want. you know, like Timothy, like a son with the father, you know, like a son in the family business, not where he was shackled or, you know, bullwhipped, oh, son, you have to do this, have to do that. He wanted to. It says, or is it naturally care in verse 20? It was just his nature. He wanted to do what would take care of God's heritage, God's inheritance. It's like in, what is it, Genesis with Adam. You know, you go to Luke 3, there's a genealogy which ends, it talks about Adam, the son of God. The words the son are italicized, but if you trace it all the way back to the start, it's the son of, so it's accurately added. Adam was the son of God, and before he lost what God had given him, there was a time where it says God brought the animals to Adam to see what Adam would name the animals. God didn't say, you know, the animals didn't have name tags, cow, horse, giraffe, whatever. You know, God says, hey, here's this animal, Adam. You know, I'm picking on you because you're the closest right in front of my eyes. Hey, Adam, what do you think you're going to name this thing? And Adam had spirit. He had an open line of communication with God. And he was uninhibited with God. So, logically, it doesn't say this. It's not written down that Adam asked God. But it seems logical that he would, rather than use his intellect, use the spirit. You made the animal. You're asking me what I want to call it? I don't know. What would you call it? And God, more likely than not that this is how it happened, or very likely, maybe we'll leave it at that. Adam says, I don't know. What would you name that animal? And then God says, well, you know what? If it was me, I think I'd call that thing a horse. All right, that's what we're going to call it. We'll call it a horse. All right, here's another one. What do you want to name this one, Adam? I don't know. Well, what would you call it? If it was me, I think I'd call that thing a dog. All right, we're going to call it a dog then. You know how they had just a good working relationship, like Timothy and Paul, like a son with the father. You know, a good, just, they loved each other. That affection, you know. And sometimes, you know, I think, like that, the thing, oh no, we're not friends of God, we're sons of God. I know that sons of God is so much greater, but that does not mean that we're lacking what they had previously. We're not. It's like, okay, you have a table with, you know, here's a coffee pot and a dish of bagels on the table. Now all of a sudden there's the coffee pot, the dish of bagels, and 15 other tables with all these other foodstuffs on them. The coffee pot and the bagels are still there. Just like friends, that's still on the table. We have a lot more, but this did not get taken off the table. Look at, I guess now maybe we'll go to, turn to Acts chapter 1. There's a guy, most of us know him. I think everybody here has at least heard of him. Uncle Harry was Dr. Werwell's brother. We're going to get to his favorite song in a minute. Acts chapter 1. Who'd like to read one verse? Read a verse. No, Dennis, you already read one. Okay, oh, Ruth. Over here. Okay, Ruth.
For you, John truly baptized.
Whoops. With... I'm sorry. Acts chapter 1, verse 1.
Oh, verse 1.
Yeah.
I thought you meant a verse.
Oh!
The former treaties have I made, O Theophilus, of all that Jesus began both to do and teach.
Right. The word Theophilus, it's from two Greek words. Anybody want to guess what the first Greek word is?
God.
Right. Theos, which is God. It's two Greek words, theos, which is God, and the other one is philos. Anybody want to guess what the word philos translates into?
Philadelphia.
Well, it's part of that. It's used 29 times, the word philos, Greek word, between the Gospels and the New Covenant writings combined. It's used 29 times. All 29 times, it's translated with the same English word. You want to guess what that English word is, Rube?
Beloved. Beloved.
That's a good guess. It's wrong, but it's a good guess.
Friend.
Friend. It's used 29 times. 29 times is translated friend. Now, probably for us, beloved might communicate better, but you don't want to leave the friendship aspect out of it. Beloved can, you know, you can... It's translated friend. You can look at it yourself. There's only 29 uses and read them for yourself and see what you learn. But it's not, you know, it says friends of God. God could have, or beloved of God, He could have said theo agapeo, right? He could have. I mean, agape means love. Philos or phileo, that means love. But philos, it's a love, you know, it's like on, more like on a human level. And this is the word, it's all scriptures God breathed. That's the word God said. He didn't say theo agapeo, guys, or whatever you'd say with that. He said theophilus. It's like a, like on a human level, beloved of God, like Moses, face to face, like a man talks to his friend. Yeah, we're God's, we're, we got the Abba Father, which is much greater than just having what Abraham, Moses, and so forth had. But we didn't lose that. We, a lot more was added to that, but we didn't lose that. We can still have that. Anybody ever have a father or ever have a time where, yes, this is my father, but we ain't getting along too good right now? Ever had that? I know I did. You know, I think maybe one other person might have had that too. Yeah, he's my father, but we ain't seeing exactly eye to eye on stuff. You know, and maybe some of us had more of that than others did. You know, but you, he was still physically your father, like genetically, we still have God's seed within us. You know, from a spiritual point of view, does that mean we're going to see eye to eye with God? No. You know, it doesn't. That's up to me. And for me to see eye to eye with them, you know, like, what can I do for you? That gets into, you know, the working with God stuff. And it's something different than just saying, okay, I'm your son. Give me this. Give me that. Do this for me. Do that for me. You want me to do what? I'm not doing that. You know, it's that's I'm still his son if I do that, right? But the friendship relationship might be sort of edgy, you know, if I'm that way. Could be the point where, you know, father might say, you know what, maybe I'll wait till you cool your heels just a little bit and we'll try this again, you know, because you're not in sync. But we got what they had and more. And it's how the thing goes, Theophilus, you know, friends of God, like on a, you know, just a good level like that. Yes, we're sons, but it doesn't mean we got to give up that he can't be my friend. You know, we can get along really, really well, knowing that we can never lose what God has given to us. But part of what God has given to us, he's put it out on the table. Here's a relationship that's available with me. And we can even be friends. I'm your father. You're my dear little child. And we can even get along. You know, on a good, you know, just like a one-to-one level. There's a place in, I forget, one of the Psalms someplace, talking about God, it says he humbleth himself to behold the things that are done in the heavens and on earth. And the word humbleth himself means he like stoops over and looks down to see what's going on down there. And yet, he talked to Moses face to face. Maybe we'd say eyeball to eyeball. Well, if Moses had that, we don't have less. We could be that way with God too. I mean, that's what God has made available to us, that plus a lot more. Thought I'd read you the words of this. I mentioned Uncle Harry a while ago. This is his autobiography. You know, he recorded tapes, and then after he fell asleep, people typed it out. His favorite song got put into the front of this book. It's in the song books too, but his favorite song was My God and I. And I just wanted to read you the words of this. I know it's not scripture, but it really has some good heart to it. It says, My God and I go in the field together. We walk and talk as good friends should and do. We clasp our hands, our voices sing with laughter. My God and I walk through the meadow's hue. He tells me of the years that went before me, when heavenly plans were made for me to be, when all was but a dream of dim conception, to come to life earth's verdant glory see. My God and I will go for aye together. We'll walk and talk as good friends should and do. This earth will pass, and with it common trifles. But God and I will go unendingly. And it's just, it's a great relationship that God has made available to us. Not, you know, not the friendship thing, but that included within the sweetness of that daddy relationship included within that, we can be as like a friendship relationship included within. There's a whole lot more, but that's a part of what God has made available to us. So, I think that's it.
Thanks, John.